This episode of the UAV Digest is sponsored by GoEngineer, provider of design, engineering, and 3D printing solutions for the aerospace and unmanned vehicles industries. To learn more, visit the UAVDigest.com/GoEngineer. You're listening to episode 284 of the UAV Digest. I'm Max Flight in Hartford, Connecticut.
And I'm David Vanderhoof in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Fort Washington, Pennsylvania. Cool. Hi all, happy spring. You know, Max and I are saying we're both tired before we started this show, and I don't know if it's tired or it's allergies. Both of us are swigging water like crazy to be able to talk, so forgive us, but we're looking forward to a good show, Max. How are you?
Yes, we are. I'm doing well, David. I'm doing well.
So let's see. We've got a really good show tonight. Lithium ion batteries, the Parrot Anafi, of course, the FAA news, but this is a do not fly or you're grounded episode. And I thought Max would love this, airplane seat manufacturers talking about using drones to keep production line. You know, we like tying in all of our episodes together in one show. Of course, we have a Heather approved environmental story, and some things about the conference, the Defense IQ's Countering Drones Conference. So I think we should get started, Max. What do you think?
All right, David, let's get started.
Well, our first story is from Yahoo.com. Lithium-ion batteries aren't good enough for electric flight, but maybe lithium metal is. Now, batteries are a good thing, but I couldn't find them a fuel cell story this week. So I'm going to defer to the boss of all things electrical. Max, what are we talking about lithium-ion batteries? We know the problems there, but what's a lithium metal battery?
Yeah, it's a little different. It uses a different electrolyte. And this comes from a company called Qberg. And they say, or their tagline is, the future of batteries is here. And they've developed something as an alternative to lithium ion. Now, as you said, David, we know there's problems with lithium ion batteries, or rather, they're not as perfect as we might like. They don't store enough energy for our tastes. High temperatures actually degrade the performance of the battery, lithium ion batteries. And of course, we have this thermal runaway issue that has cropped up from time to time. So Qberg has developed this proprietary non-flammable electrolyte. And they've got some good backing. They're backed by Boeing, number of venture capitalists, and the U.S. Department of Energy. But with this non-flammable electrolyte, it allows for higher energy density materials. So they've tested this in a quadcopter. They flew the same quadcopter with standard lithium ion batteries and also with their lithium metal batteries with the new electrolyte. And they got a 70% longer flight time with the lithium metal batteries. The old lithium ion batteries, the quadcopter flew for just under 16 minutes. And with the lithium metal battery, it flew for just over 27 minutes. So that's a pretty good result.
And Qberg, now I'm going to date myself because every time I read this week, I kept saying Qberg, like the old video game. But Qberg says, our highly stable proprietary electrolyte enables the use of high-voltage cathodes and lithium metal anodes in a safe and reliable format. Thanks, Dad, for all of that electrical work you had me doing when I was a kid. We've developed our technology from day one to be a drop-in solution for the off-the-shelf lithium-ion manufacturing equipment. Now, that's kind of cool because they're going, okay, we need to fit the existing profile with a better product. So that's good news. And of course, Boeing and the U.S. Department of Energy are getting involved, and Boeing's interest is electric aircraft, cargo drones, and urban air mobility. But the Department of Energy, clearly, they see something positive. They see something positive in the electric, in this electrical product, and runaway in storage is definitely something we need to keep in mind as part of a hazard of the industry.
Yeah, energy density of batteries, of course, is something that comes up time and time and time again, not just in the unmanned aviation world, but also in terms of electric automobiles, other vehicles, things like that. If we could have a big step change, or at least a significant increase in the energy density, in the storage capacity of batteries, that facilitates a lot of good things. Now, I actually wrote to Qberg, now granted earlier today, and hadn't heard back from them because I didn't find anything here that addressed how close they are to being able to begin manufacturing these things. Is this something that's close at hand or something that's off in the future? Just where do we stand on that? But if we hear back from Qberg, we'll pass that along. I'd be very interested to see. And like you say, David, if it's a drop-in replacement, which it sounds like this is what they're trying to do, that's wonderful. Also don't know about manufacturing costs and therefore retail price, if you will, for these kinds of higher capacity batteries. That could be a factor in this as well. I imagine there's some kind of a premium for the higher capacity, but just how large that is could really impact the degree to which these things take off if they do become available.
You know, and higher premium for the successful, the Endurance, but I'd pay the higher premium just for the safety. You know, I think that's
true. Yeah.
You're talking about, this is a win-win, more power and safer. I'm all for that. So let's talk about a company we haven't talked about in a while, Max, Parrot. They've got a new drone out there. This is from gearbrain.com. The Anafi thermal drone captures heat signatures on a lightweight body. Now, Parrot is kind of second fiddle to that other company with three letters starting with D, J, and I. But they've got a really neat FLIR camera.
And it's integrated with the regular 4K HDR camera that you would expect. And so both of these are mounted on the same gimbal. And this gives you the ability to capture heat images on still photos, in video, and you can even stream or view the heat images from the drone, look at them real time. But an interesting twist to this is that the thermal image can be merged with the video image so that it gives you some greater resolution, I guess, or a different perspective that's more complete. And they have a video, GearBrain does, on this that we'll put in the show notes that's really worth watching because I think it really demonstrates how useful it is to be able to merge the optical image with the thermal image. It's pretty impressive.
And very useful, you know. And I was watching a show about space archaeology the other day where they're using space-based satellites to survey Egypt and using thermal imaging over physical imaging like this to find archaeological sites that aren't necessarily available to the naked eye and how the success that they were having. So like I said, like we've talked about, Max, I mean, hardware is hardware, but sensors is probably where it's at. And this sort of combination of starting to combine sensors, LiDAR with imaging and FLIR with imaging is going to be a way for drones to get ahead of advanced in anything where you need data and you need to be able to decide where the data is. I can also see this in our precision agriculture.
Thermal imaging resolution is not great. It's 160 by 120, Maybe that's where we'll see some advances in the future, greater resolution. But it is certainly better than other options that are available. It's pretty flexible. It can read temperatures between 14 degrees Fahrenheit and 752 degrees Fahrenheit. 752, that's an interesting number. That must be a translation from something, maybe centigrade or something. It's a round number. But in any event, the Anafi thermal drone is not available right this instant, but they say that it will be available in May. And the price we're expecting to see, at least in the U.S. for this, is $1,900.
So you're not talking about, well, that's the drone and the sensors. I mean, we'll put it that way. But clearly, this is not designed for the low-end consumer. This is definitely a prosumer, if not a pro-level UAS. So, but like I said, the announcement really isn't about the aircraft itself, but more about the sensors. So I think we're going to keep going down that road.
Yes. Yep.
Okay. From the your grounded thing, I don't know. Have we talked about drones flying over green monsters before? I don't think so. But this was from Metro US. FAA probes drone sighting over baseball game at Boston's Fenway Park. One way to get caught is fly over a nationally televised baseball game and have it be on national television. Not good, huh, Max?
No, not at all. This was a Boston Red Sox game. They were playing the Toronto Blue Jays, as you said, at Fenway Park in Boston, affectionately known as the Green Monster. And from the videos that you can see, it looked like it was a DJI Phantom. Now, DJI had a statement pretty soon after this flyover. They said, quote, "Whoever flew this drone over the stadium apparently overrode our geofencing system and deliberately violated the FAA temporary flight restriction in place over the game." So the ball club reported this to the Boston Police Department. And subsequently, we find out that the Massachusetts State Police got involved, so did the Suffolk County District Attorney's Office and the FAA, and they apparently found the culprit.
Yeah, it was a kid, a juvenile, and a named juvenile, which, of course, would make sense because we don't do that to juveniles. But question is he going to be charged? And this is just, they were stupid. They should have known better, and this was a kid just doing something stupid. I don't know how malicious the intent was. I don't think it was, but yeah, I sort of feel for, you know, I don't know what to say. Their charges should be brought against them, but what was really telling was how quickly DJI responded to the fact that it was their product and they knew that it was being flown beyond what they had set up, that the geofencing had been turned off. And I'm wondering kind of creepily if that helped locate the specific drone in question and the pilot who flew it.
I'm curious to hear the details of how they specifically identified this juvenile. But if in fact the geofencing was specifically defeated, then, I mean, that implies some degree of intent and knowledge that what they were attempting to do was not right. But I don't know. I don't think that the kid should just get off scot-free. I'd actually like to see the parents get a really hefty fine for failure to supervise their child. But other people will disagree with that. So I hope this stays in the news so we can follow along what happens with this. If you're from Boston and run across some further developments, let us know.
And in all fairness, Max, it's still better than Connecticut's reputation with teenagers and drones and flamethrowers and guns, etc. So this was just flying over a baseball game. So Massachusetts has still got you beat on that. It was not as bad as what we've had in other New England states. But let's go tropical. This was from dronebelow.com. The Brazilian National Institute for Space Research Remote Sensing Division is studying sugarcane yield reduction caused by weeds. And we're not talking about the five-tiered ones that are used to be smoked. It's just plain old weeds that take up grass. Sugarcane is a big deal in Brazil.
Yes, it is.
And $12.2 billion revenue in 2018. Weeds like Bermuda grass reduce yields, which is kind of a frightening thing. And how are they using UAVs to prevent that?
Well, what they're doing is they're studying how they can use UAVs, because we've talked about the sensors, we've talked about precision agriculture, and how combining those with drones, you can identify specific areas that need attention. Therefore, you don't have to irrigate the entire field. You can target the irrigation or target insecticides or other treatments. But there's a problem here with sugarcane and the Bermuda grass in that they have a really similar signature.
This research team described methods to overcome this limitation. Optical sensors imaging consider texture features. You know, we talked about this before when we were talking about using imaging to pick out animals like koala bears. This is, again, we're talking about sensor technology. You've got to be able to fine tune the sensors because a lot of things look alike, you know. At 20,000 feet, I'm sure Max and I look alike. You know, it's it's only you could tell. I mean, you have to be down at the 5 foot level to realize that there's a half a foot difference between us. But that being said, you got to fly to figure out how to use the sensors that way.
And also, in a way, what we're seeing is sort of a second level of development here, where we're a little bit beyond just developing the sensor itself. And now we're seeing more and more examples of how do you refine that? Like you say, how do you refine the analysis, or how do you refine the sensor approach, how you deal with the data in order to get to the result that you're looking for. So we're going deeper into the application of sensors and how to make them useful and valuable. But they came up with some conclusions in this study, and they found that using just the visual spectrum, you can differentiate the vegetation in this particular case by 83%. But when they applied the use of this texture technology, the accuracy increased from that 83% up to 92.5%, which was better than any other studies that have looked at how do you differentiate sugarcane and weeds growing in the sugarcane. So there's a positive result.
Let's talk about a positive result from a tragedy. As we record this, it's been, wow, it seems like forever, but it's only been 4 days since Our Lady or Notre Dame Cathedral in Paris caught fire. But surprisingly, drones were used effectively to help the Paris firefighters save a lot of the relics and save a lot of the structure. Paris fighter flyers, and this was from QZ.com, Paris fighters borrowed DJI drones from the Culture and Interior Ministries, a Maverick Pro and a Matrice M210 with thermal cameras. The drones tracked the spread of the fire and provided information on how to best position the fire hoses. Now, if you don't know Notre Dame, it's in the middle of the Seine on an island. So it's not easily accessible, and unfortunately, it was made even harder to access after 9/11 and some of the other events that happened in Paris. But they were able to provide the best position for the fire hoses.
And it didn't mention it in this article, but I've seen another report where there were people inside the cathedral trying to retrieve some of the relics and so forth. And because of some of the images they were getting from at least one of the drones overhead, they found that where the people were was very dangerous and in imminent danger of some collapse. So they relayed it to the folks inside to get out. And that's a view they had that was only available with that drone. Now, I mean, they could have used helicopters, but they note that much more expensive, less flexible than using drones to do this. It seems that the geofencing restrictions were unlocked temporarily. The cathedral is Notre Dame is close to Le Bourget Airport, and so subject to some geofencing there. So I don't know how that geofencing got unlocked, but whatever that process was, it seems like it worked in this instance where you don't want to have to go through some lengthy process in an emergency in order to get the drones where they need to be.
There also is reports of an extinguisher robot was used inside the cathedral, allowing firefighters to pull out the flames without putting any lives at risk. I mean, this was really kind of awesome. I was excited that this technology, and one of the things we talk about helicopters, right? Helicopters have got downwash that'll fan the flames, you know, and you can't fly a helicopter in a building. It's so much of the reliquary and were saved by the act of the 400 plus firefighters. So a 850-year-old building being saved by modern technology. Cool. Very cool. Drones for good. Sorry I'm a bit welling up, but, you know, it's the Catholic in me. And tonight being Holy Thursday, it's kind of a lot of good came out of a lot of bad. So, okay, Max, take it away. I see seat pitch in our future.
Oh, this is from Commercial Drone Professional. Airplane seat manufacturer deploys drones to keep production line moving. This is about Collins Aerospace. If you're not aware of the recent history, UTC Aerospace Systems, UTC United Technologies Corporation, UTC Aerospace Systems, and Rockwell Collins have become Collins Aerospace, which is a unit of UTC. And they're using drones to transport parts from their storage center to the production line. Now, the storage center is apparently some distance away. It would take time to drive the parts over to the production line. So with these drones, they can move parts to where they need to be with greater efficiency, and that has productivity implications as well. So that's an interesting use. But something else came up recently with Collins Aerospace, and they've unveiled plans. This is from a press release by the company. They've unveiled plans to redefine the future of electric flight with, quote, the grid, the most advanced electric power systems lab in the industry. So the grid, they're calling it, is planned to be a 25,000 square foot electric power systems lab in Rockford, Illinois. And they note that they're going to design and test systems such as high-powered generators for the next generation of electric aircraft, including commercial, military, business aviation, UAVs, and urban air mobility platforms. So here again, we see another big company. We point out Boeing and Airbus and Bell and some of the others becoming increasingly involved in electric vehicle propulsion, autonomous vehicles, urban air mobility, things like that. I don't know, David. I think the big players in the commercial world are really seeing opportunities here, at least great enough opportunities they're willing to make investments.
Absolutely. You know, people are putting their money where their mouth is, you know. Boeing, Airbus, Rockwell, it's And, you know, Max, in a way, it's a more solid base. It's not just venture capital, you know, where people are speculating on this stuff. These are companies that are investing in solid technologies for what are planned. So, I mean, it's a really good sign for our industry that money is flowing in and it's stable capital and it's not just speculatory anymore. It's building investments for the future of the industry. So that's a very, very good thing. And at this point, I'd like to say something if you don't know. Now, I know a lot of our listeners listen to Airplane Geeks, but if you are in UAVs and you want to listen to something a little different and listen to a really, really good podcast, and I joke about Max and Seat Pitch, but Mary Kirby and Max do an amazing podcast called the PaxX Podcast, which is all about passenger experience. And I know a lot of our UAV listeners travel to conferences and stuff and do a lot of travel in airlines. But if you want to listen to a really good podcast beyond UAVs or airplanes, definitely take a listen to Max's produced but co-host PaxX Podcast, because it's one of the gems in our family of podcasts that have all sprung out of 10 years of Airplane Geeks. And my boss over there does a really good job with it. And Mary Kirby does a really good job. I wish I could was half as good as she was.
Well, thanks for that, David. Yes, Mary is quite the global expert when it comes to the passenger experience. It's a real pleasure to do that show with her. But we had like a little promo in the middle of this, didn't we?
Hey, I set that up for me. Sorry. You know,
we like
podcasts, you know? So, okay. Our next story comes from Her Majesty, the environmental engineer, Heather. And this is the Pacific Standard from the Social Justice Foundation. How drones and GPS are helping indigenous people in Ecuador save the Amazon. So it's not necessarily a wildlife story this week, but it's definitely environmental, and the Amazon is a big deal.
Yeah, this is a really interesting piece, and it points out that what they called marginalized communities really around the world are responding to a long history of others using maps and taking their land rights, using maps to take away things that have historically been theirs. So this is a story about an indigenous people, the Cofan, I guess, in the Amazon. They're using GPS, they're using mapping software, and they're using drones to sort of document their territory in a way that helps them establish that it's theirs and has been for long periods of time. So on the drone part of it, there's sort of an interesting example in here how they've been using drones to identify some illegal activity.
Organizations equipped the COFAN with a drone, hidden camera, and GPS devices to track the illegal activity and create their own bylaw, warning minors to stay out. So they're monitoring their, like we've talked about in Africa, you know, monitoring poachers and stuff, using technology to protect their land and protect their culture. So it's a really drones for good, you know. Indigenous people are definitely self-sufficient, you know, and they want to keep the poachers out and keep the miners out who do basically strip mining and deforestation. So, I mean, all of that is really good, and technology helping indigenous people.
And thanks to Heather for pointing that story out to us. It's very interesting. The role of drones in establishing land rights amongst indigenous people. That's pretty cool.
Max, I would say we need to wrap this up, but we've got a conference coming up that we'd like to talk about, and that's July 9th and 11th, 2019, in the Hilton London Olympia, and that's Defense IQ's Countering Drones Conference.
They're going to discuss some important issues about the threats, risks, resilience, technology, and incident response. And they're going to help attendees get an understanding of what future drone threats look like, how to prepare your organization for them, how to respond effectively to drone disruption, cooperating with other organizations and industries. They're going to address aligning your current plans with solutions and recommendations from leading experts, deepen your knowledge of this area. They've got a number of speakers lined up, someone from the U.S. Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency, that's part of the Department of Homeland Security, someone from CUAS, the FIFA Director of Security, a number of others in the industry, the security director of the Riyadh airports. And so it really promises to be quite an interesting conference, and on a topic that, of course, everybody has on the top of their mind these days, especially after Gatwick and the Boston Red Sox and so forth. This is kind of a critical issue, and maybe the most important part of it is how the response to these kinds of illegal or unwanted drone activities are responded to. So I think the conference will be very informative for attendees. We'll have a graphic on our website at theuavdigest.com over on the right-hand side where we list several other conferences. And if you click on that graphic, you'll be taken to a website where you can get more information. And again, that's Defense IQ's Countering Drones Conference 2019. It's going to be held July 9th through 11th in London.
And if anybody listening has some spare change lying around, Max and I would love to go. All we just need to do is have some airline tickets. So just throwing that out there. But I guess now that I've groveled enough, I think maybe we should wrap this one up, Max.
All right. Be sure to find us at theuavdigest.com. We'll have show notes for this episode at theuavdigest.com/284. There you'll find links to the news stories we talked about, links to the companies we talk about, as well as a couple of videos that you might like to take a look at. And when we put videos in there in the show notes, you can watch them right in the webpage if you like, so you don't have to head off in some different direction. So it's very convenient. So hope to see you there.
And of course, you can reach out to us in many different places. You can find us on Twitter at UAV Digest. You can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/UAV Digest. You can become part of our Slack listener team. And you can do that by sending us an email to feedback@theuavdigest.com. And what we do is we send you an invite and you can join the party and you can talk UASs as well as airplanes and passenger experiences on all of our Slack channels once we send you an invite. And if you want to reach us, you can reach us at feedback@theuavdigest.com. Of course, we always want to see your videos. If you want to submit a wildlife story, we have a new email address to add, and that's heather@theuavdigest.com for our wildlife executive producer. And of course, Max and I have our own individual accounts also, David@theuavdigest and Max@theuavdigest. And if you're on either Slack or Stitcher or Google Play or Apple Play podcasts, leave us some feedback so other people can find us. So with that, I'm going to say this is David in Fort Washington.
And Max in Hartford.
Thank you for listening.